Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop. Joined alongside me is Whitney Wright. And Whitney, doing the intro today, it's earlier than we normally record the podcast, and I got to be honest, I almost forgot my name.
You're like about to introduce yourself, and you're like,
what comes next? What's my name? Up. It's there.
Well, it's been a bit of a struggle getting this podcast going this week. Just you were sick one day and then we had flooding yesterday. That was like impossible to get to the office for some people. So
yeah, for those of you that don't know, this is probably the rainiest season I can remember in San Diego since I've moved here.
Yeah, same.
We're both former Midwesterners, so we are familiar with what real rain is.
Yes.
And it shuts down California.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the one plus side is that everything's so green right now. It's really pretty. Like when you're driving up from San Diego up here, just like the mountains and the hills and stuff are just like really green. But yeah, it is not, the infrastructure here is not made for this kind of rain.
No, we were just talking about that before with the building, and it's a brand new building. Yet whenever it rains, there's still like little leaks and stuff like that. And I can just imagine somebody saying, you know, we didn't even think you needed a roof when we built this place.
Yeah, seriously. I know there's tons of places in Southern California that have outdoor seating and like not really an overhang or anything like that. Cause they just always expect nice weather. So, I mean, I'm enjoying the weather, the rain here, but I know, it does make things a bit more complicated. You really can't go anywhere.
Yeah, you can't. Like, and you know, we do know that whenever people stay inside, they generally spend more time on their devices than on the web. And that's something we learned during the pandemic, obviously, but I do find it interesting. You know, they keep referring to that as sort of like the digital pullback that in the same way that there was like the idea that spending was pent up during the pandemic and people were at home. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go back out, you have all these things you're going to buy, and then it sort of like pulls back. It's interesting that attention has like an inverse correlation with that.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely spent more time on my device and my computer yesterday.
Yeah, so. Obviously.
Yeah. Well, heading right into topics, our first one, Meta's at it again. Meta is building a Twitter replacement, and this is from What's New in Publishing. With the decline of Twitter, RIP, I love Twitter, but it is seeing some rough changes lately. Other platforms.
But the user growth, users are growing though, right? They have more active users.
I have no idea.
I think that they're making less money maybe, but
they have more users.
They actually have more users.
Sometimes that's the way it goes. But other platforms are looking to create the next text-based social media platform. Meta is in the early stages of what they have codenamed P92. It's a standalone decentralized social network for sharing text updates, so very similar to Twitter. Users will be able to log in using their Instagram credentials. And the most interesting part of the project is that it is planned to be decentralized, or that users will be able to set up their own independent servers and set server-specific rules for how content is moderated. This could give Meta the opportunity for the new app to inoperate with other social products. I was looking at that word. I was like, that is not a word, but it is. It would be able to like be incorporated with other social products.
Yeah. So this would have been the social tool that would have been good for everybody whenever they first made Facebook. What they describe, I think, is less Twitter and more Discord almost. Just based on the descriptions that I've seen. I'm a heavy Twitter user, and I think that every person or every company that's tried some kind of Twitter clone, like I've even like messed around with Mastodon and set it up before. And I think it's unique because of its simplicity in some ways. And so nobody can really stop themselves from over sort of like featuring a product. And, you know, if this is going to be something you set up on your own servers, I imagine that it's a protocol more so than it is a platform itself, meaning it'll probably have to be open source to be able to do that. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but if that's the case, there's a lot of these out there. There's no reason why you'd think, well, Facebook and Instagram, they can push it. Yeah, I think that'll go so far, but do people want to use a Discord or Twitter clone that is Facebook or Instagram? And then despite the fact that it's your own server or whatever, I think that's a very small portion of the population that's going to get that and see value in it.
I agree. I think that Twitter is unique and it's, you know, kind of the OG. One of the first really social networks out there after MySpace kind of imploded on itself. And you know, like Facebook, like you said, it's kind of similar to what Facebook used to be almost. It used to just be like updates, you know, you put Whitney is doing or Whitney is, and then you get to fill in those memories that pop up on Facebook. Yeah. That I'm like always like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I put that on Facebook.
Yeah, but, I know. Lots of regrets. We all have them.
But, you know, and then Facebook turned into this whole other thing. But I just don't know about replacing Twitter with something like this. Like you said, I don't think the adoption is going to be very high. I think Twitter has a very specific use, and it's kind of a brain dump for people. Like, you can literally say almost anything on, not almost anything. People just like throw out weird stuff on Twitter, like stuff you would not post anywhere else. And I just don't know how replacing that with something like this is really going to be helpful or like even enticing to people.
Yeah, you've already watched. So like, I remember like over a decade ago, there was all kinds of crazy social media predictions and almost all of them were wrong, but none of them predicted that something like a Facebook or Twitter would still be here in some capacity. But I don't think it's fair to say that they always will be either. You've watched social media to some degree, or at least the role that social media plays in all of our lives. It's sort of become more regionalized recently. So like, I don't know about you. Do you use Telegram? Do you have Telegram at all?
I do have Telegram. I had some friends that were like, kind of like, what's up? Like, you know, it's not encrypted or I don't know, whatever. I have Telegram, but it's still, I like get notifications all the time of people like popping in and joining it. So I know it's like growing.
Yeah. I mean, Telegram is used in a lot of countries as like sort of like the primary social media. I know like, it's one of the things that's always referenced in the war in Ukraine discussions and stuff like that, that I read in the news. It's like, you know, officials are posting onto Telegram and things like that. And then WhatsApp is something that all my friends from South America, it's like they only use WhatsApp for almost all forms of communication in groups that way. But I would say like in terms of people that I grew up with both back home in the Midwest and then also here in Southern California, very few people natively use Telegram or WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. It's usually like I have friends or something like that from another region or area that that will use it. And I kind of see maybe that happening, but more from a digital sense, meaning I think that there is an opportunity here for websites. And this is a social media prediction. I'm not great at them historically, but this is something that I have seen trending a little bit more with other areas. And I could see it happening with social. And that is that website owners or people that are domain owners can become a place where groups of people around a particular topic or subject, you can think of it almost like a forum, but the idea of having, you know, like social media as it is today, I think that kids today are going to grow up thinking of that the way that we think of like processed foods. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the healthier ways to sort of do this is to do it in compartmentalized groups. And I think that these things are better off being formed on their own because I think there'll be an apprehensiveness to allow someone like a Facebook to come in and do this stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about the future of Twitter? Where do you think it's heading? Do you think it's going to be sticking around for a while and that it's not really going anywhere?
I'm probably more optimistic on Twitter than most, primarily because they're a private company now. So whenever people talk about how much money they make, I'm skeptical of the accuracy of it. But that being said, I do see users growing and I do see it growing in relevance again. So Twitter is this weird one because it was essentially released around the same time as like a Facebook. I think it was around almost the same time that MySpace was like kind of peaking. So they're the only ones that have really stuck around this long. And if you look at their growth trajectory, it's like up, up, up. And then it's like pretty clear when a lot of these other ones like die, there's this like peak and then they bottom out. It's like Twitter like started growing again. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It might be the one that sort of like has some sort of staying power, but it really depends, I guess, on the roadmap. And then, yeah, I think there's a lot of factors that play into it that make it really hard to predict.
Yeah, I agree. Well, OpenAI is back and they released GPT-4, which is now available in ChatGPT and Bing. This is from Search Engine Journal. So this version of GPT is an improvement in reliability, creativity, and handling of nuanced instructions. It's safer. But it doesn't know anything about events after September 2021 for some reason.
Still.
It can accept image and text inputs on and generate text outputs. It was tested on simulated exams designed for humans and found that it outperformed existing large language models. It also performs well in other languages, such as kind of ones with low resources like Latvian, Welsh, and Swahili.
Welsh, that's an impressive one that they got.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it does well in Welsh. it can still hallucinate facts, though, and make reasoning errors. It doesn't always check its work carefully, me either. That's why I always have someone look over my
stuff.
Neither
do I, so.
Yeah. yeah, I know. It's more human than we thought it was. It may produce security issues in its code, but it is 82% less likely to give inappropriate content than the previous version and follows policies better regarding sensitive things like medical advice or self-harm, things that, you know, need specific information given. And to access it, you have to join a wait list, but it may very well be time to optimize your Bing search engine or Edge browser. But Microsoft recently laid off its entire AI ethics and society team, so...
I saw that plot twist. I saw that yesterday, and then I read the article, and it's a little disingenuous. It's not really. It was a division that was kind of created prior to OpenAI, mm-hmm. and it had a slightly different focus. And so I think it's fair to say that it's not necessarily Microsoft saying, "Hey, we're not really worried about
ethics
or something like that." But it does pose sort of the question, I think, around this that's going to keep popping up more and more, and outside of, you know, the legal right and instances we talked about, robots maybe needing other, like a different set of laws at some point. It does beg the question in many cases of like, well, a machine can do this better than a human, but is there an ethical concern by a human not executing these commands or providing this information or something mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, people starting to take Bing a little bit more seriously?
I mean, I was skeptical. I'm growing more and more sort of intrigued by mm-hmm. what they've got going on, mainly because I think that Google has really failed in sort of like, God, they were so far ahead of everybody in AI. I know internally there that they were very proud of that mm-hmm. and that there's nobody that's invested and acquired more. I think they bought Boston Scientific or Boston Robotics or whatever it is. And then they basically just bought the staff and then they sold the company again, the IP, partially because they just wanted to be that far ahead in a lot of different aspects of it. So to me, they keep messing up the way that they communicate and try to roll in products. And Bing seems to be on top of it. And I think part of that stems from OpenAI. You know, they had so much that they had built that people are sort of like finding inside of ChatGPT that is useful prior to the release this year or end of last year, whenever it was. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that it makes it seem so amazing to people is that because before they released ChatGPT, GPT-3 was basically organized by the tricks that it does. Like answer a question like you're explaining it to a four-year-old, you know, mm-hmm. Be a Q&A bot, snarky bot, you know, all this kind of stuff. And they were all separate. So you could kind of see it perform one trick and you're a little impressed, like a magic trick. But when it sort of like brings them all together, it's a lot more impressive. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think that what we're going to continue to see with stuff like this is that, you know, you mentioned the September 2021. It's like that's kind of like when I think all their really comprehensive training data and stuff like that ended. But you're seeing people already start to put out tools to make it really easy to add your own training data. I think you're going to start seeing a lot of plugins. And I think that that's going to be an industry in of itself where people are going to sell access to APIs or data or information or something real time that basically augments GPT with information that you want to use it for or something like that.
Yeah. I feel like. Like you were saying, like Google was so far ahead, and I honestly, like months ago even, was just like, wow, like who can ever like get ahead of Google? And then just like Microsoft and OpenAI just kind of swooped in, and like Google is just kind of left floundering a little bit. Whereas like I feel like Microsoft and OpenAI have executed very like just, I don't know, really on like a specific schedule, and like whatever they do, like it's not like any sort of floundering, I guess is the best word I can come up with. But then like when Google brought out Bard, it was almost just like they're trying to like keep up now.
I forgot they even kept... the name of it. I forgot they had a name for it.
Yeah, I haven't tried it, honestly.
I know that Lambda was the model on for things internally, and they've used it for other stuff too. But I mean, you bring up a great point. You'll remember this from being, and some of our listeners and viewers as well. At Pubtelligence, I used to either start or end most of the presentations with like a historical example, usually of a failure or of, you know, like, I think there was one where the articles are like, can anyone overtake the search giant? And they were talking about Yahoo.
Oh,
and then
there's
another one where it's like, does Nokia have a monopoly on the phone biz? And it's like, you know, it's really easy to think these things at the time, and then it's almost comical later on. And I think that there's a certain amount of humility that you have to impose on sort of the things that you think are non-disruptible, because they can be.
Yeah. Do you remember from AOL, there was a smarter child you could talk to?
Like, no.
It was basically this, which I don't understand how they had this technology at the time. But it was a robot you could talk to on AOL, and you could ask it questions and like have conversations with it, and it would respond to you. And like,
that's interesting.
I know. And I'm like, how did they have this technology back then, back in like 2003 or whatever it was? And then like this comes out, and it's like, obviously this is way more advanced, but it would give you information if you asked for it. So I'm just
interesting.
Yeah.
The information. So I know that
anybody else remember Smarter Child?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look this up, because if our listeners are like, everybody's like, yeah, I remember that. I don't, but yeah. I was going to say they've been able to do like sort of chat response things for a long time. People used to try to do them to convince people that the Turing test was like passed by modern technology. And everybody agreed, like, no, you're just writing an algorithm that's, you know, it only tricks people in certain situations. But it retrieving information would make it somewhat unique there.
Yeah, you could ask it like search questions, basically, and it would give you facts. I don't know if it was searching the internet. I don't know. I can't remember how fast the responses were.
I mean,
were.
Maybe robots have been in charge for a long time, and they're just now revealing themselves to us.
Maybe that's why AOL, you know, disappeared. Smarter Child took over.
Yeah, that's why they disappeared.
Yeah. Well, we have another social network that's coming up and challenging Google and Microsoft. TikTok enters the search ad market, and this is from Search Engine Land. They are preparing to launch its own search ads platform. Sorry, I said search engine market, search ad market. Anyway, they are launching its own search ads platform, which will allow advertisers to bid on specific keywords and phrases related to their products or services. During the beta test rollout last year, advertisers were able to gather the search terms responsible for conversions and use high click rate search terms as headlines for their best performing TikToks. And they're looking to capitalize on growth this year. And studies show that almost 40% of young people, millennials and Gen Z, look for a lunch spot on TikTok or Instagram over traditional methods like Google Maps.
Wow.
I know. I use Google Maps, so I'm not a typical millennial, I guess.
Yeah, me too.
But it would work like Google. The ad platform would allow businesses to bid on specific keywords and phrases, but probably offer additional unique features like more audience targeting options. TikTok may offer more competitive pricing and better ROI if it's done well, but some advertisers are skeptical that TikTok has the brand safety in place for search ads product, which I could see being a problem as well.
Yeah, so I'm not a big believer in brand safety being something that advertisers as a whole are actually that concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very small handful of the top 10% of advertisers, which makes up a huge portion of all advertising, don't get me wrong. But I think they care about it more from a PR perspective than an actual perspective, because I think they want their audience. And if their audience is, you know, viewing something that's unbrand safe, as long as the context is accurate and the ads themselves are actually viewable, I think they care more about safety from the standpoint of like it's their budget isn't getting wasted basically on not their audience. And the thing that I think about with something like TikTok is that it's clearly, to me, going to dominate a lot of ad spend that I think previously went to Facebook coming up here soon.
Yeah.
I mean, people ask these questions about Twitter and Facebook whenever they first started showing or running ads. It's like, do you think that they can actually take market share? Can they actually make some money? And, you know, the predictions were like pretty like conservative considering what they accomplished, especially Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that with something like TikTok, you're going to see the growth happen along with sort of like this move for people to use it for things like that. The thing about 40% use it to look for a lunch spot over TikTok or over Instagram or Google Maps. That was kind of eye opening to me from the standpoint of when you start using a platform for things other than social media, mm-hmm. that's kind of what allowed Facebook to sort of grow to prominence. You remember games on there? People were like playing games on it.
Obsessed with games.
And so I do think that you're going to see some more of that type of behavior. Honestly, if you're a publisher and you're trying to figure out how you get your audience or acquire them, you got to pay really close attention to how people are using some of these different platforms, mm-hmm. because the second they start using it to find information or find this or that, you're going to find that there's these platforms out there that are gold mines, maybe just for your specific category or whatever. But
yeah, I think that for advertisers, TikTok is really an area to capitalize on. I just see, it's just, you can kind of see it happening. Like Facebook is losing popularity, especially amongst the younger generations. I know so many people that don't even have Facebook anymore. And then so many, especially Gen Z, is on TikTok, and that's kind of like follow where the money is. I think it's kind of a no-brainer if I was an advertiser, but I know that a lot of advertisers are skeptical of it, but I think that they're being a little too conservative, honestly. But for publishers, you know, who might be concerned about, like you said, where this money, the ad money, is going to be coming from, it probably is coming from Facebook. I think people are seeing what's going to be happening. And I personally think if you're a publisher and you have dabbled in video at all, it's time to start dabbling in vertical videos. I've seen a lot of articles about how the vertical video is becoming increasingly more popular and getting content out there on apps and social media platforms that have vertical video is going to be like really important in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things that you've seen emerge, and I'm surprised it's not taken hold a little bit more. I know that internally it's something that we've explored and plan to have for customers here soon. And it's the ability to, on a mobile device, offer somebody video that is vertical form. So like you could have the video on your page, and if you tap it, it comes like full screen vertical video. Yeah. Otherwise, it floats down in the bottom, but as a, you know, vertical rectangle as opposed to a vertical square, mm-hmm. it's actually a much better user experience for bottom bar navigation on a mobile mm-hmm. device and things like that. So, I think that like leans into this sort of like more TikTok oriented or vertical video, mm-hmm. Snapchat style mobile world. But the one thing that I will say is, you know, a wrench could get thrown into those plans if it got banned in mm-hmm. European or other Western countries. However, there'll be something that fills that void in the same direction. But yeah, I think, you know, I actually think TikTok will probably, or some version of it, will continue to probably rise to prominence. But yeah, when it comes to social media, I don't think that you're going to be looking at something with a fixed dominance for a very extended period of time.
Right. Social media comes and goes so quickly. And I think, yeah, that's something important to remember. It's definitely a tool that you can use, but I would never rely on it.
That's why search is so hard to figure out right now in mm-hmm. terms of like what the iterations of it will be, because we have mass disruption. We also have an incumbent in Google that has been here for a while. I mean, we don't really have cycles in social in search engine like popularity over time that like we could make predictions on. It's like mm-hmm. you had the early days where there's a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. and then you have Google dominant for up until now, questionably if it continues, and then so you don't really have a lot to go off of. Social media, it's a little bit more predictable in that mm-hmm. it seems to be something that is affected by, you know, social political trends.
Yeah,
and stuff
it's
like
more
that.
Like a fad,
yeah,
than something more stable. But we've been getting some questions and comments from the audience on our YouTube channel, and then also publisherlab.org. You can give us some comments or questions at the top. So this was back when we were talking about ChatGPT, Bard, and search results. This was back in February. This was a comment that we got, and I think they just wanted clarification or just to confirm that what they're thinking is correct. And they said, correct me if I'm wrong, but Google and Bing make their money off of ads, so they can develop the best generative AI they can. But if they decide to only show AI content without leading you to a website to view ads, they are not going to make money, period. So I think they will have great AI on their search engine, but they will also get you to click on the links on the search results page to get those ads making money. Is that correct? Is that like they wouldn't just get, I think people are concerned about them using AI to give search results, you know, maybe like the snippets and stuff at the top. But like they said, Google makes money off of ads. So you have to go to a website in order to see ads.
Yeah. So I would challenge everybody to think outside of the realm of like, this is the way that things work today. Mm-hmm. And this is my warning to publishers in general. And it's the reason why I think it's really important to build something that isn't relying on people. Basically, like, you need to be able to figure out how you go and get your audience, not how they passively come to you through Google. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of people that have espoused that, but it's really important to understand how you get your audience. And the reason why I say that is because Google and Bing do make their money off of ads. The gross majority of Google's ad revenue, I think it's close to 80 or 85% comes from Google search ads. Mm. So 15% display. I know that whenever antitrust legislation popped up, like a lot of industry experts said, you know, what Google should do is just cut out their entire display business because they don't need it.
Yeah.
So if you think about it in terms of, well, search ads, they appear in search results. They don't appear on the website, right?
Right.
So it would make it really easy for them to cut that portion out if they were thinking about it before. And then on top of that, there's no reason why they can't generate answers and content and then put ads in their own content.
That's not against any sort of policy or antitrust right now?
Oh, well, I think it would get challenged legally for sure. Yeah. But the thing is if the robots are producing unique content, like I think the challenge would be if they're getting it from the websites, in which case, you know, I think that Google would probably be, they'd pretend to be benevolent and say, hey, give us your, I think they'd try to go maybe the Facebook instant articles route where it's like, yeah, just put the article inside of our stuff. And then we'll, I mean, they kind of tried it with AMP. I kind of think that this is where they were going.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't see that being the direction that it is. A search engine is a search engine. AI is different. Mm-hmm. So like a good example is yesterday I was, I have an allergic to like mold spores. I'm pretty sure that's like the rain here and everything.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was searching on, there's my dog seems to have allergies as well. And I was like, how to tell if a dog is allergic to mold, right? And so I get a list of results and like some of them are good, some of them bad. I had to like cut through them because I'm trying to pick out an article headline from a list of something that I think answers the question that actually isn't the question that I want to ask. The question I want to ask is, does my dog have a mold allergy? Mm-hmm. How can I tell?
Yeah.
And it would be great if something was just like asking me questions back or something would just scan my dog and tell me.
Yeah.
But instead I had to sort through articles. So so realistically, the answer that I wanted there was not something that a search engine is going to give me. Mm-hmm. It's something that I wanted AI for. However, sometimes I want to look through the news.
Yeah.
Like yesterday, I think we were looking up a case study example for marketing yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I just typed in the subject, clicked on Google News. And then I just combed through the articles because I wanted to see all the information that was available on this topic. I didn't necessarily want an answer to a question. So I think that's a really good way of framing sort of like what type of content you make today. What is the majority of your content? Is it something that people are like looking for, or is it something that is, you know, people are basically trying to find all the information on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good clarification. And like we've said before, AI is going to be different than search engines, and they have different purposes. They can be used together, obviously, but search engines serve a different purpose.
I think there's AI. I think it's called, I hate to say it out loud because I'm afraid I get it wrong. Manny, just cut it out and bleep it if I say the wrong one. I think it's you.com maybe.
Okay.
But it's theoretically a ChatGPT search engine where it's, they've basically mashed together in the only, like with zero imagination, I would say, of like, you have ChatGPT, you have a search engine, like smash them together and that's what it is. And yeah, I think if you used it a little bit, you would just be like, it's the worst of both.
Yeah.
So they have to be something different.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's it for this episode. Like we said, there's publisherlab.org. If you want to ask a question, give us a comment. There's a place there on the website to do that. There's episodes on there that you can peruse through. You can find us on any major podcast platform. Make sure and give us a rating on Apple or Spotify. Spotify has ratings, right? I don't use Spotify for podcasts.
I think it has ratings.
Yeah. Give us ratings on Spotify too. But that just helps others like you find the content that they're looking for, relevant content to them, other publishers.
If Spotify doesn't take ratings, you could just write Spotify a letter and just say rating 5 stars.
Yes, exactly. That's what they want. They want a bunch of email or in mail. They want personal physical mail.
Yeah, I want it to be physical mail.
Yeah. But we appreciate you stopping by. And this has been another episode of the Publisher Lab.